this morning's big revelation. What will the future of Wall Street regulation be exactly? Marketplace is not some engulf and devour corporation. It is a nonprofit and it is listener supported. So to keep our coverage strong and relevant, what you could do is make a tax deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift in any amount will really help us keep you up to date and well informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by the end of this year. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. I'll have the global perspective on business and economics in a moment. But first, on Wall Street this morning, it's a bit like watching the presidential election returns. In about 2.5 hours, the final text of the Volcker Rule comes out. This is the controversial centerpiece of the reforms that followed the great 2008 financial collapse. Experts say big financial institutions are more prone to make huge bets with their own money than with clients' money. In the interests of avoiding another taxpayer bailout of Wall Street, the Volcker Rule will attempt to limit this proprietary trading. Another piece of this today, forcing CEOs and boards to legally promise that they're obeying the rules. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports on that.
We all make mistakes, but if you're a CEO or bank board member, the buck will stop with you. If the final Volcker Rule requires banks' top management and boards to personally certify their bank's trades are legal. Robert Maxent is a partner with Deloitte & Touche. He advises banks. He says certification could make boards and CEOs pay more attention.
It does make them very acutely conscious of, you know, have we in fact fully and completely complied with the rule?
Maxent says banks are concerned about how much certification could cost. It could get expensive if the rule also requires certification from accounting firms. Micah Hoffman is an attorney and Volcker Rule specialist at Public Citizen.
There would be an independent outside public accounting firm to make sure that everything is legitimate and correct.
If it's not, there could be consequences, like lawsuits and even criminal charges. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
In China, officials are worried that credit there got too easy, fueling what might be a speculative bubble. The thing with bubbles is that they can pop. Some Chinese lenders have used borrowing between banks as a disguise for some of their riskier ventures. But interbank lending is a bedrock part of the legitimate financial system, and some foreign banks are feeling caught up in China's crackdown. Philip Hampshire covers international business for the BBC. Good morning.
Hello, David.
Some Chinese banks have been creative in the use of interbank lending.
Well, yes, exactly. It's important to note that while off-balance sheet lending sounds like a bad thing per se, it's actually just simply an accounting tool, perfectly accepted under US accounting measures. So all of this is essentially fairly legitimate. The issue is the degree to which it happens and how much of it is in what this murky world we call the shadow banking system. Now, the Chinese government is worried that this may be fueling bubbles in certain areas of their marketplace, in particular land prices, also property prices too. The Chinese government is worried about what this means for the future.
So as the Chinese government cracks down, some of the foreign banks are also feeling this, and they're feeling a little aggrieved.
Absolutely, because some of the foreign banks, of course, are involved in these off-balance sheet lending activities. The difficulty is that a lot of these non-bank institutions that are involved in shadow banking, things like hedge funds, can end up taking large risks. And that's what the Chinese government is worried about. Of course, the foreign banks then could get caught in the crossfire because they're used to dealing with those kinds of things.
So interesting. The BBC's Philip Hampshire in London. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David.
Now let's check the numbers. The FT 100 stock index in London is up 0.1%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are each up at the moment. Marketplace's Wealth and Poverty Desk this week is taking a deep dive into philanthropy. Yesterday, we met Hal Ornstein, who's been having fun with his new foundation he set up this summer with $250,000. Today, reporter Sean Cole introduces us to someone who's learned a few lessons about grant making the hard way.
I wanted to hear about the realities of running a foundation from someone who's been doing it for a while. And if that's anyone, it's Diana Barrett, the only person I've ever heard compare philanthropy to bowling.
You're picking up that ball and you can't see what you're hitting because you're wearing a blindfold. So you kind of go, voomp, did I hit anything?
Diana actually runs a very successful 8-year-old foundation called the Fledgling Fund. It gives money to filmmakers who are making socially impactful documentaries and helps build outreach campaigns around those films. We talked in her home office.
Oh, you have an Emmy.
Yeah.
Actually, 4 Emmys and 4 Oscars. But before that, she tried to run a family foundation with her mom to serve immigrant populations in New York, and it kind of flopped. Her mom really wasn't interested in it, which brings us to the first of 3 realities I took away from our conversation. Number 1, family foundations are only as healthy as the family is.
A lot of people have found that their family foundations are just being split into pieces because they can't get along with their siblings. I mean, one sibling is really interested in saving wolves, and the next one doesn't care about wolves, but he cares about whales. That's a whole other market. Whales and wolves don't run in the same market.
And before setting out to save the wolves or the whales or whatever, this is reality number 2, you should really research the issue first and not assume you know anything.
The big thing in philanthropy is people say, find your passion, you know, when you start a foundation.
You just rolled your eyes when you
said that.
I do,
because very often I see people starting foundations thinking that the sun kind of sets on their head and not realizing that other people are already in the field and they might be doing really good work.
And finally, when you do link up with those people doing that good work, know that they might not be fully honest with you about how a project is going.
You have money, they don't. There is no incentive to tell you that they tried something and it failed.
Which is information you really need to know if you want to be effective. To get back to the bowling analogy, you need someone to tell you where the pins are if you have any hope of hitting anything. In New York, I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace.
Later today on Marketplace with Kai Ryssdal, why not everyone admires wealthy philanthropic donors? And tomorrow morning with me, a conversation with a pair of philanthropists who are also vivid critics of philanthropy, Peter and Jennifer Buffett. A Lot to Give is the name of the series, which is accumulating as we speak at marketplace.org. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.